Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd of ESPN, Pittsburgh. Dave, I hope you enjoyed the weekend. The Steelers had the weekend off. Chance for the guys to get 4 days away, maybe just kind of clear their heads a little bit, have a good time, and back at practice today. And the news we've been waiting for, maybe we finally got one piece of good news, and we'll probably not have a better sense of it until Wednesday, but James Harrison did practice today.
Yeah, but, you know, he gave an interview to the media today as well, too, and I heard that on Steelers Live at 4. It really didn't sound too encouraging, to be honest with you. Reading in between the lines here, and let's face it, you know, practicing 2 days back-to-back is always going to be the test with him until he does play. Sure, he might have worked today. We don't know what level that he worked at, and, you know, then they're
well,
not...
I did see Cabali say he practiced fully. Now, I would assume that means, you know, who knows? They're not, you know, Brad, these practices aren't that strenuous, I don't think, to begin with. But I did see that, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, but his interview alone that he gave, that I saw on Steelers Live at 4, it just didn't have the feel that he was too encouraged. Didn't sound too encouraging that he was going to suit up this week. But, you know, Wednesday and Thursday are going to be the key days with him. They'll be off tomorrow. They'll practice Wednesday and Thursday, and if James is able to go Wednesday and Thursday back-to-back fully, then, yeah, I say it's good. If not, then we're right back where we've been since the OTA session. So the other good piece of news is that Troy Polamalu did work today as well, too. And once again, we don't know what level that is, but Polamalu has been real optimistic about his chances of playing. So, and when you throw in Rashard Mendenhall there, who knows, you know, based on the interview that he gave today as well, too. But, you know, this would be the week that you would think. This would be the week that we've had kind of circled for him since he came off PUP, that, you know, this would be the week, you know, that he would come back. And, boy, the Steelers sure could use him this week against the Steelers' wide nine defense and almost dares you to run the football against them.
Right, the Eagles' wide nine defense, and they looked good last night. Got a win against the Giants, and they'll come into Heinz Field at 3-1. Dave, anything else? Any other kind of news over the last 4 days, or since we did anything Friday that's of note, Steelers related?
David DeCastro was spotted, and this, you know, read into this what you will, by Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, spotted him at the WV, you know, at the West Virginia game versus Baylor there, which, by the way, that was one heck of a football game to watch. No defense whatsoever in that one. But Florio spotted DeCastro. He was there with Andrew Luck for that game. Spotted him walking briskly and without a limp. So read into that what you will. DeCastro is right at about 5 weeks removed, I think, from his injury. Of course, being placed with that designation on the injured reserve list, he has to wait 8 weeks anyway. So, that's one little, you know, that's the first really bit of news we've heard about DeCastro since he suffered his injury but was placed on IR. The other thing to note, practice squad safety DeMond Cromartie-Smith, Mark Cabali reported that he was on crutches today, not putting pressure on one of his feet. So we could see a practice squad move come as early as tomorrow with him, depending on that severity of that injury there. The Steelers, of course, are carrying five safeties on their 53-man roster, with Robert Golden, of course, being the fifth one there. So,
I didn't really get Mark's tweet there because – you know, unless this is something where it's a season-ending injury, you make a practice squad move. But if it's, 7 days, 10 days, I'm not sure that they do anything with him. We don't know the severity, so I guess that's what I thought. I found that kind of unusual for him to say that.
Right. If it's going to be a 3 or 4 day injury, though, you know, then I don't know. You know, you need those bodies out there for a reason. That's why you have the practice squad to practice against.
Yeah, you know, my point is he could be out 2 weeks and they could not necessarily make a move. You know, 61 guys, your 10th, you know, your sixth safety. You know, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, you know, when you throw in Polamalu in there and you know, limiting his reps more than likely, you're all of a sudden you're down on bodies at safety at the strong safety position. So you have to keep that in mind as well, too. So if he is out 3 or 4 days, I suspect there will be a move, you know.
But put him on the injury reserve?
No, you release him with an injury settlement of some sorts and then bring him back afterwards, you know, after he's
here. Yeah, I disagree. I just think it's no big deal if he's missing 3 or 4 days. They have guys missing 3 or 4 days all the time, and, you know, that's why they got 63 guys or 61 guys. So I'd be surprised if they made a move. Now, if he's going to be out a couple of weeks, then – yeah, sure, they'd do something, but I just, you know, the guy's, he's just another guy who's injured on the Steeler team. So I thought it was unusual that Mark tweeted that.
We'll know as soon as probably tomorrow, that's for sure, because that's when the move would be made, if they are to make one. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they do, even if it's a few days. So let's see what else we got here going forward. The Eagles, Andy Reid, off of their off their win of the Jets, kind of updated the status of their players. Nnamdi Asamoah, of course, you know, he let miss time last night after he got poked in the eye. Evidently, that's not very serious. Got scratched, I guess, is what they're calling it. They put drops in that eye last night, and he'll be reevaluated on Tuesday, but that's not expected to be serious at all in nature. He's not expected to miss any time. Michael Vick suffered a knee contusion during that game. He's fine. Derek Landry, one of their defensive tackles, has a little bit of knee inflammation. Running back LeSean McCoy tweaked his knee during the game, but both those players are expected to be fine. Two guys that missed the Sunday night game, their tackle, King Dunlap, and linebacker Akeem Jordan, are both suffering from hamstring injuries. Dunlap might practice. It sounds like he'll practice on Wednesday, but Jordan might be struggling to get back to the field. So overall, the Eagles are fairly healthy coming out of that Giants game and heading into the game against the Steelers.
Yeah, Dave, I'll tell you what, as I watched a fair bit of football yesterday, we're 4 weeks in and 30 teams have played 4 games. Of course, the Steelers and the Indianapolis Colts have not. The transitive property is not such a big deal in the NFL. If A beats B and B beats C, it's not always that A beats C. But
there's sure you to read some of the reports out there or listen to some of this crap on Twitter, you would swear that because the way Denver destroyed Oakland, that we're the worst team in the league right
now.
Well,
I'm just going to say, if you are a Steeler fan right now, you should be uncomfortable, because what's happened with the Jets and the Raiders and the Broncos when they've played, you know, when they played the Falcons, is these teams are getting smoked and teams are running the ball on these teams. The Steelers couldn't do it. The Steelers couldn't stop the run, and they can't run the ball effectively other times. There's nothing to feel good about in the Steelers. I mean, look, there are a lot of things to feel good about the Steelers' offense and what they can do. But defensively, seeing what's gone on with these other teams, it has to give you pause. Now, that certainly, you know, I'm not casting a death knell on the season, but I am saying this game against the Eagles is just ramped up. In terms of importance, you can make the playoffs at 1-3. You can make the playoffs at 1-4. But obviously, the deeper you dig this hole, the tougher things are going to be. And this is a home game, and then they'll have a short week going to Tennessee on Thursday. This Eagles game feels like as big an early season game as I can remember, you know, in 4 or 5 years for the Steelers.
Now, let's face it, Denver's got a good team. Okay, we lost to a good team there, but they still had a chance to to win that game, when Roethlisberger, leading up to the Roethlisberger interception. So let's throw Denver out of the equation here, because they're going to be a solid team and they're going to be competing. They're going to make the playoffs, in my opinion, this year. The Jets, hey.
The other two teams might be two of the four worst teams in the NFL.
Yes, but and the defense gave that game away. And the offense with the two, when you put those two fumbles on the ground, and then when you look at the way the Steelers performed on third down in that second half of that game, That's why they lost that ball game, plain and simple. And you throw in the explosive play by Derek McFadden there. Should they have beat Oakland? Should they have beat Oakland handily? Absolutely, especially with the problems that they had at in the secondary there. So, yeah, there is some pause there. But on the flip side here, we're 4 weeks into the NFL season, and usually about week four or week five is a good time to stick the thermometer up the butt and take the temperature.
Absolutely. And that's why I say, you know, it's just I think, you know, when you see other teams being effective at things the Steelers couldn't do effectively, it just, you know, makes you think about what's going on. We've talked a lot about the personnel on the defensive side of the ball, the young players, whether it be Ziggy. It's really hard to fault Cam Hayward and Steve McClendon. They're not really on the field. But whether it's Ziggy or Lawrence Timmons or whoever has been playing right outside linebacker or the corners, the guys haven't really made the big plays. And we talk about the splash plays. Mike Tomlin talks about it. I'm sure he'll talk about it again tomorrow. So, you know, Michael Vick and LeSean McCoy offensively, with the weapons he has on the outside, with DeSean Jackson and Macklin and Selleck, and then a defense that can really bring the pass rush, even though they didn't have a sack last night with Babin and Cole and the depth that they rotate on that D-line. And then Asamoah and Cromartie Smith. I mean, this is a real deal of a football team. I actually think the Eagles are one of the five best teams in the NFL. The Steelers are going to have their hands full. It's a big game.
This will be one of the best. This will be the best defense that they'll face, probably one of the best defenses that they'll face all season, if not the best. Offensively, the Eagles have failed. They're not doing a good job of scoring points, especially on the road. In particular, when you look at their games against Cleveland and Arizona here, so
it is remarkable that they're 3-1 and have, you know, they didn't turn the ball over last night. They won two of those three games. They've got 12 turnovers through the first 4 weeks. So
their defense has kept them in a lot of ball games.
Well, they've racked up a ton of yards. I think they were first in the league coming into yesterday in total yards. It's just you turn it over 12 times, you're not going to score a lot of points.
Absolutely, and that all goes hand in hand together. And when you look at the Steelers' situation, I've got a post going up on successful plays that really breaks it down both offensive and defensively from the aspect of 45%. If you gain 45% of the yards needed on first down, that's deemed a successful play. If you gain 60% of yards on second down needed for a first down, that's a successful play. And of course, 100% on third and fourth down, a successful play. This comes from the hidden game of football, the book from several years ago here. It's just, you know, there's several, stats, you know, places like Advanced NFL Stats and of course Football Outsiders that drill this down even further. But when you look at it and you look at what the Steelers are specifically on defense, the success rate that they've allowed on all three downs, not only in against the run and against the pass, it's miserable. And it's not like you can really point to one exact area. They are giving up successful plays on all downs. They're allowing other teams to stay ahead of the chain, so to speak, there. And we saw what happened with the Raiders game there. You let any team convert third downs in a close ball game late in the game, you are asking for trouble if you can't get your defense off the field. And offensively, it's no secret here that on first and second down, running the ball, the successful plays, I think the Steelers are right around 24 or 25%, which is huge. I mean, that's very, very low. And thank God for the play of Roethlisberger on third down and the ability, luckily, to be able to run a few times on third and short, fourth and short. That's what's kept them in some ball games here. So it's not hard to pinpoint the problems, and defensively, Troy Polamalu spoke about this today in his interview. If you're not getting pressure on the quarterback and you're asking these corners to run with these wide receivers, somebody's going to get open if you're not putting, you know, bouncing the quarterback around. And you're not going to be able to do that, you know, with Vic either. The thing about the Giants game last night, David, is they bounced Vic around quite a bit in that game. Vic was on the ground a few times. He was constantly getting hit. And if it wasn't for Andy Reid staying committed to his running game after a dismal first half by LeSean McCoy, if he didn't come out and still try to stick to that run in the second half of that game, they would have lost that ball game. So This is a very, very tough, and we'll get into this here in a little bit. This is going to be one of the toughest defenses that the Steelers will face all year.
Yep, no question about it. And Mark Cabala is just tweeting on, obviously on Twitter again, saying, again, I don't know why Mark says it's promising news. Steeler linebacker didn't tell the James Harrison, didn't tell the media much about his status for Sunday's game against the Eagles, but did give an update about his health via Facebook. God willing, I will be playing Sunday against the Eagles, Harrison wrote. You know, I don't know what that means, but for some reason, Mark finds that to be encouraging, so or promising. So again, kind of interpreting words, I'm not sure that we know anything more than we talked about 3 minutes ago. So, yeah, the Eagles, I do think that, Dave, I was in New York this morning, and I just nobody has talked about the fact that Tom Coughlin did not take another shot to get closer with 15 seconds left in the game and 3rd and 19. Now, I realize there's no timeouts. You run all sorts of risks of, you know, getting another penalty, throwing an incompletion in the field of play and not getting a playoff. But you've got Eli Manning, who's a smart quarterback. You can run a quick wide receiver screen. You can, heck, you can throw it in the end zone with 15 seconds. Maybe, you know, fake a hook and go and have a guy. But I just didn't understand the idea of kicking a 54-yard field goal when you had another down.
I listened to his press conference last night, and he had no faith that they he was worried about the time running out, you know, them not being able to get the guy out of bounds and them not being able to clock the ball and all. So what really hurt him was that offensive pass interference call. I mean, that just crushed them right there and took them out of field goal range at that point. Then, you know, the icing kicker thing aside and all like that. I don't know. I think if Tomlin had to do it, I mean, if Coughlin had to do it all over again, I think he'd do the same thing in that situation. But let's not understate how serious that penalty was to them and that extra yardage there.
Because, no question, that was the key play. I think it was a really dumb decision.
Well, here's the thing. Here, the Eagles play that bump, you know, that press coverage there, and they would have been in some sort of man there. I don't think they would have been able to do that because it would have taken a pinpoint pass right on the sideline is the only area.
That's why you got a quarterback who's won two Super Bowls and you got, you know, you take shots like that. That's the whole, I don't know. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer. I thought it was stupid. You left it down and you're a 50-yard field goal. I think, you know, virtually any kicker is best at kind of maybe 50-50. So if you can get 7 yards there or 10 yards, you're changing the game.
Well, that's what Monday morning quarterbacking's for, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm sure
now, the other one I want to bring up one other play while we're talking about stuff is how in God's name does Haruki Nakamura let Roddy White run by him on 1st and 99 with, you know, 50 seconds left and no timeouts? That might be the dumbest play I've seen in the National Football League in a long time.
Falcons ran play action on that play.
I know, they ran play action. How funny was that? What, are you fighting on it?
I just don't understand why you let a guy get behind you in that situation there. You know, the guy's not a premier safety in the league.
He looked bad earlier in the game on play action where he was back there and turned the wrong way. And
he did have an interception in that game, yeah. that Ryan threw it right to him. And Ryan just didn't even see him there in that situation there. But, yeah, you're asking for it in that situation there. Let a guy like Roddy White, I mean, get behind you there. I found the whole play-action thing amusing, too, on top of it. But, hey, you know what? The Falcons are a good team, and that's just, you know, winning games like that. You know, the tough ones like that, you know, shows good character on their part. And, you know, the Texans, I mean, hey, if the Texans are sneaking up on anybody, shame on you. This is the same team that they had last year, only they have Matt Schaub back healthy now. And that J.J. Watt is unreal for them. And, I mean, that guy really has a good shot at being defensive player of the year for them. So, I like what the Falcons are doing this year. I like what the Texans are doing, and the, you know, quote unquote barring injury situation, there both those teams are going to be around for this thing for sure.
Yeah, no question. I mean, to me, I think that you know I'll have a power ranking up on my blog on 970 tomorrow. But
oh no, you're doing the power ranking.
I got roped in. I got roped in with a group of people. that for 970 we're doing that. But there's no question in my mind. I would take the Texans over the Falcons. I think, you know, after that, you know, if you want to rank them based on schedules, just look at the schedules. But the teams we generally thought were good teams coming into the season are more or less. I mean, New Orleans gave a credible account for themselves yesterday, but they're probably pretty close to done. I mean, they're already four games behind the Falcons, so you can almost write the division off here 4 weeks in for them. And you know, the wild card stuff gets tough after that. But I think all the teams that generally we thought were going to be good are pretty good. The big surprises, clearly, for me, Dave, are the Vikings yesterday, Christian Ponder with another good game going into Detroit. So those two teams are kind of flipped from where I thought they'd be. And then there's another NFC team that's
Cardinals.
Right. Of course, the Cardinals at 4-0, they've got a good defense. But I think St. Louis. I think St. Louis is actually – I think Jeff Fisher is a very good coach. And if they can play decent on the defensive side of the ball when they're healthy with Steven Jackson and Sam Bradford, they can do some things. I think they're fun to watch. So, and they also don't forget that they have a bevy of high draft picks because of the RG3 trade that they made this past offseason. So they're going to get some more talent in there. That might be a franchise that's definitely headed the right direction.
I think that Seattle game, I mean, the St. Louis game, though, was kind of smoking mirrors, though, because – would you have their touchdown was Danny Amendola on a fake field goal there.
Yep.
And the rest were field goals, on top of it. So, Sam Bradford went, 16 of 30 passing for 221 and zero touchdowns and interception. So I'm not with you on that aspect with the Rams just yet. They're,
I think Seattle's a good team too. I think they get, you know, very good defense. We'll see. You know, look, I don't think they're making the playoffs. We've seen them win, you know, two games a year, seemingly for 5 years, and they could very well end up 8-8 or something like that.
Now the Cardinals, they really showed some character, although that was a team that you know, everybody says, you know, they should have beat probably pretty handily at home there. But we
both said that, right? We both laid the points and thought they'd win big, and they had another miracle finish.
Yeah, but, you know, hand it to them for getting it done, though, when they had to. Their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games there this year. And, hey, props to Ryan Tannehill. This kid, I think, might be for real here. That was really a grow-up game for him. As you mentioned the Vikings a little while ago, Christian Ponder. These last two games for Ponder, I think he's really grown up a little bit. Far from premier with either one of those two guys, but you know, definitely props to them. And RG3, I said before, you know, in our Friday podcast, the reason I was jumping on the Redskins bandwagon there was because of that kid and that kid only. And evidently, you know, that final drive of his headset or something went out, so he was there calling plays. And of course, you hate to see your quarterback having to run so much like that. But he got the job done, and that kid really, really looks like the real deal eventually for them if they get any play from their defense moving forward here. I don't think they're going to compete this year in that division, but, you know, this is only a rookie year for that kid.
That's a tough division, and it looks to me like you can probably make a decent case that might be the best division in football. We're going to know a lot more, and the Steelers, unfortunately, have to play all four of those teams, and that'll start this weekend against the Eagles. Dave, just any other kind of results that stood out for you over the weekend? Cincinnati with a nice convincing win. Obviously, the other two teams in the division played on Thursday night, so quiet for the AFC North. But did anything else leap out at you?
Other than the Jets being absolutely...
I don't understand why Tebow is playing more. Not just because of Mark Sanchez, but I assume that they keep saying they have a package in there and they're going to use it. And, you know, when you get two snaps a half, it's tough to be effective. Now,
why did you bring the guy in?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I understand. I
love San Francisco using it with Colin Kaepernick. I mean, they tore it up.
Yeah, he's the better Wildcat quarterback probably out of all of it. He can wing the ball as well, too. That's just a mess over there. And depending on how long Santonio Holmes is going to be out for them, with that foot injury or whatnot, I mean, that's just a mess after losing Cromartie over there now. So I expect that whole thing to just self-destruct here Pretty soon, and it wouldn't be surprising. They lose three or four more games in a row, then Rex Ryan's going to be out of there, as will probably Mike Tannenbaum, and they'll just have to blow up that thing and go forward with that. New England, boy, after a slow start in that game, they really turned on the Jets against Buffalo. What about Mario Williams? That guy's been invisible since signing that contract.
Yep, I think you were talking about Revis being out for the year. Yeah, I think Tannenbaum's probably gone at the end of the season. If he goes, Rex Ryan probably goes. It's just not enough talent there. They're not that good. I didn't think they were good coming in. Mark Sanchez has been mediocre in their two wins and awful in their two losses. And the Patriots, all of a sudden the Patriots feel like last year's team where their defense isn't good. A lot of people expected a step forward with the defense. They've got two first-round picks in there in Chandler Jones and Dont'a Hightower.
31 fourth-quarter points they scored in that game.
Yeah, first team since the Bengals in 72 to put up 45.5. So they put up 45 yesterday. That's a franchise record. So they're always dangerous. And, I do think right now it looks like Houston's the cream of the crop in the AFC. And if you're going to pick the next couple teams, you pick Denver, you pick Baltimore, and you probably pick New England. And I don't know that you can put the Steelers or Bengals in that conversation. I'd like to see the Bengals beat a good team, and I'd like to see the Steelers win on Sunday before they're part of that group.
Yeah, you can't put them up in there just yet. The next few games, will definitely – determine exactly where the Steelers are at, and it starts with the Eagles game, as you said. And I've done some observation from that game last night against the Giants, sort of a preliminary look here. Here's what the Eagles are going to do with that wide nine defense. They're going to dare you to run against them. They like to rush the passer with those ends out of a nine technique. They like to stack the linebackers up over the tackles to cover, to cover up against the run, and they dare you to run that ball inside. Now their outside linebackers have enough speed that you're not going to be able to kill them on a perimeter. The way you beat them is you've got to run it between the tackles there, and you've got to run the power to do it. So. If the Steelers want to win this game, and the corners outside, they'll play either press man coverage or they'll play the off press and a lot of bump and run in there. They'll cheat one of their safeties down in the box if they start getting gashed in the run. But otherwise, what the Eagles defense does is they're betting that they'll get to your quarterback before one of your receivers comes free from Asamoah and the other corner.
Cromartie Smith, they played more zone than I would have expected yesterday.
No, not a lot. Not a lot at all.
No?
No, not a lot. They'll bring them safeties down in there. Now they'll hand off like a guy in the slot, like a tight end or something like that. They'll have the linebacker pass him off to one of the low safeties there. But listen, that's the whole reason they got rid of Asante Samuels, because he's mostly a zone type corner, and they wanted to go and that's why Nnamdi didn't have the good year that last year with the Eagles as well, because they were playing a lot of zone type looks in that defense. Now this year, you go back and look at the film. It's a lot of man, a lot of press man, a lot of off man, and they'll cheat that safety all over the place there. One thing that I did see, and it was pretty evident late in the game, because the Giants did a fairly good job, I guess, at running the football there. Bless you. Those safeties will bite on play action in a heartbeat. So that's what opened up some of those one-on-one passes for the Giants in that game. If there was ever a week that the Steelers needed to run the football, this is gonna be the week, because the opportunity is gonna be there for them to do so. They'll play a lot of seven-man fronts in this thing, and they really rely a lot on their linebackers and coming in and plugging up those holes there. So if the Steelers can run the ball early in this game whatsoever with some success whatsoever, it makes it a lot tougher on that defense because, like I said, they'll have to bring one of them safeties down in there, and they'll have to cheat the run a little bit more, which will really, really leave those corners out on the island. And, of course, you've got to handle those defensive ends coming wide on top of it. But there's not going to be I expect, and we'll get into this later in the week, and we'll have a beat writer on hopefully on Wednesday from the Eagles as well, too. But I expect a lot of 11 personnel this week of the three wide receiver sets for the Steelers because you want to spread the Eagles out here. They're going to have to find a way to try to run out of that personnel group. Another thing is the no huddle here because with the Steelers front four, they like to rotate those guys out. And that's one thing that they pride themselves on is rotating those front four guys out to keep them fresh here. The Steelers, if they get in no huddle and can get some success going on there and keeping those guys on the field, that'll really, really slow down the pass rush because, let's face it, you know, that's what that defense, that's how that defense is built. And that's how they cover. But like I said at the top there, if there was ever a week to run the football, this is it because, that's what they're going to dare you to do.
Yep. Good stuff. And as you said, we'll get into that. We've been a little light on the email, so if people want to email us and talk about any of these things for the Wednesday show, we're happy to do that. We'll take a look around the league as we always do and prep with the prep with the beat writer for the Eagles and take our first look at the Eagles. But this would be a good time to send some emails in if you have questions you want us to answer.
Another bit of news, of course, Chuck Pagano from the head coach from the Colts evidently is battling leukemia now. So what? That's awful news right there for the Colts and all. And Bruce Arians is going to be the interim head coach for the Colts moving forward here until Pagano gets that kind of straightened out there. So really, really tough news for Pagano and, kind of a break for Arians, if you will. If he's never has had a shot at a head coaching job or whatnot, and, this will be his shot right now to show what he has. And he's got a good young quarterback over there in Andrew Luck. They've been really throwing that ball around so far. I think the Colts offense is averaging 357 yards a game, which ranks them 16th overall in the league right now. And curiously, that's one spot ahead of where the Steelers are through three games right now. And in addition, the Colts offense is averaging 266.7 yards per game passing thus far, which ranks them 11th overall in the league. And Arians has a tough battle going up. They host the Green Bay Packers this week. So that's going to be a team that if they're going to want to beat, they're definitely going to have to air it out this week against them. But what else do we see here? One interesting note, I don't think we covered this the other day as well, too, going back and looking at the film of the Raiders game here on the touchdown pass to Antonio Brown that he fumbled and then jumped back on in the end zone there. Yeah, we talked about last week after the Raiders game how Carson Palmer did a good job making checks at the line based on defenses that he saw. Ben Roethlisberger, all the accolades that we gave him so far this year are well-deserved, but he makes a very, very nice read on that play that I invite everybody to check out. The Raiders are in cover zero there, and they kind of tip their hand on the two safeties coming on that play, and they're playing their corners all off on that. And Roethlisberger calmly, he starts off in the shotgun there. He lifts his leg, looks over the defense, goes up under center, and then checks to that quick hitch to Antonio Brown there, and then Brown, of course, scores. So, props to Ben on seeing that and checking to that play, and that's definitely what you want to see, the type play out of your quarterback there. So one more kudos for Ben, even though it was in a losing game against the Raiders there.
Yeah, I think I pointed that out on our game recap. That was a great read by him on that, and good stuff. Okay, Dave, anything? We'll have a little shorter version today. Just as we said, the Steelers didn't play, and they'll be back at it Monday. But anything else to add?
No, we'll have to go over our picks from week four. I haven't totaled those up just yet. And like I said, we'll have an Eagles beat writer on Wednesday morning sometime. Hopefully have him scheduled later on today or tomorrow, nailed down for sure. But as always, people can follow me on Twitter, @SteelersDepot. Follow David on Twitter, @DavidMTodd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Send us your emails, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You're still accepting donations, too. You can find the donate button on SteelersDepot.com on the top.
Yeah, keep cranking in those donations. Dave and I need some cash to get this thing rolling.
As always, listen to David, too, weekdays on 970 ESPN as well too, because he has a great two-hour show going over there as well, too. And, David, I'll be joining you what day during the week?
Wednesdays.
Wednesdays on his show there, and also
about 3:15 Eastern time,
and pregame as well too on Sunday.
Yep, I'll be on 9 to 11 on Sunday, so a little bit of a different schedule. So we'll have Dave probably early in the morning, 9:30, 10 o'clock.
All right, sounds good. Take us out of here.
All right, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.